Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Welcome to Those Forking Fangirls, where we talk all things nerdy book, TV, movie, pop culture, fandoms, and how they integrate into our adult lives. I'm Christine.
And I'm Natasha.
And today, we're going to be discussing all things Bridgerton, Season 3, Part B, which is really exciting. Yeah. We have so many thoughts. So that part will obviously be spoilery, but as usual, we're talking snap, crackle, pop culture news, and then we're doing what right now, so you have a little bit of time before we get into Bridgerton specifics. So what have you got for us in snap, crackle, pop culture news this week, Natasha?
What did I give you?
You gave the Sabrina Carpenter
thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's been other things I need to put on there. Okay, well, Sabrina Carpenter's single, Please, 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 reaches number one on the Billboard Hot 100. And that's mm-hmm. her first number one single.
And then Espresso is also on there, like at number three and four and two. And it's been all over.
So happy for her. Like, this is her first time, right? Hitting number one.
It's her first time hitting number one. It's very exciting. And she's on it.
Very exciting.
She's got two singles up there. So it's great.
I know. I can't wait for the album to hit.
It's been super cool, like, watching her rise over the past few years. And I'm so happy that she's, like, hitting the mainstream right now. It's very exciting.
I know. I forget what happened, but a couple nights ago or something, we were talking about Sabrina Carpenter. And then one of us brought up, we're like, oh, yeah, we interviewed her.
I did.
Who did you tell? Who were we talking to?
I don't remember, but it was a while back. And I was like, yeah, we've talked to her. I don't know. Maybe it was Chloe.
Maybe Chloe or Taylor or Taya.
Chloe, maybe. Yeah.
Well, because we got flown out to the Hate U Give set, and she's in that movie. And she was like one of the only people that we kind of got to interview. And we had a lot of time with because it was just like a side
character.
She's
so cool. So nice.
Mm-hmm. And very sweet.
Yeah, I talked to her another time, too, for something else, and she was very sweet then, too. So, like, very personable or easy to talk to. So, mm-hmm. I really like her, and I'm so excited. She's doing so well, and I'm going to see her on tour. I'm excited.
I know. Christine's going to go see her. I'm like, I can't do it this time, but you guys go have fun.
Jennifer Lawrence is set to produce...
Lopez.
Oh my God, I said Lawrence and I'm looking at Jennifer Lopez. I'm literally looking at it. Okay. Jennifer Lopez, the doy, is set to produce a TV series adaptation of Emily Henry's book, Happy Place, which is really exciting. It feels really random. I don't know if J-Lo has produced anything mainstream, but I'm sure she'll have a good team working with her. I'm sure this is so exciting for Emily Henry. It's really hard to get, you know, TV adaptations greenlit, so it's a big win for The Happy Place because it does have a lot of characters, so it really feels like it does need a miniseries adaptation so that we can get every perspective there, and there's a lot to expand on, so I'm excited about that.
That's the one I haven't read yet. Like, I haven't read her mm-hmm. last two. I haven't read Funny Story or Happy Place yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to this summer. I want to.
Just listen to the audiobook. It's so good.
Oh, I will. For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Christine and I were at Disneyland on Sunday. And
oh, wait. Yeah, wait. Can I tell the beginning since I saw it first?
Yes.
Okay. So one of the Swifties I talk to all the time on Instagram messaged me being like, I need to know that you've seen this. And at the same time, Chloe, I think, texted in the Forking Fangirls group chat the same video. And it's like Chris Olsen watching this video. So at first I had no idea what to expect when I clicked on it because it just said Chris Olsen. And I see Travis's face pop up on the screen. And I literally stopped short as we're walking through a Disney cafe. And the chills that ran through me, I was like,
she's like, Travis Kelce on stage. I'm like, what? And we just like stop. And I'm like, wait, what are you talking about? Because we're trying to get to a table. And I'm like, let's go. I'm like, Disney mom time. And she's like, Travis Kelce. Oh, I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, what? Oh my God. What?
And then we proceeded to sit down and watch it like four different times from four different angles.
I'm like, did he kiss her? What's going on?
Because we saw from the side view where you couldn't see what she's doing to her face, but he was actually just using the makeup brush. And I don't know if you've probably seen since that, like, he missed his cue to do the makeup brush. Like, she put her face forward. Jan tried to tell him, but he was like being a ham toward the audience. And then he realized belatedly when she actually said something.
She's like, makeup.
It was super cute. So Travis came on stage night 3, I believe it was, of London. There were all these amazing memes. Like, there was this meme of Ken watching Barbie dance from the Barbie movie. And it was like Travis being put in the VIP tent for the third night in a row. And you know how Ken like hands his drink to another Ken and goes out and starts doing the dance? Yeah. So he pops up for the intro into I Can Do It With a Broken Heart. So after she dies at the end of The Smallest Man I Ever Knew, Travis Kelce picks her up and she like is dead in his arms as he brings her to that little red and white couch. Okay. And the snapshot that we saw of this all over the place, when I saw another TikTok that said this, was so Ryan and Marissa from The OC when he picks her up in that little alleyway in Tijuana and she's just like dead in his arms, but she's not actually dead. She's just like passed out. But it is exactly that. And I saw a TikTok that was like, my millennial heart can only see this when I see this picture of Travising Taylor Swift. And then there were so many memes like with Taylor Swift and Travis from that same picture. Oh, yes. And his shoes had red bottoms just like Taylor's. Yeah, he had Louboutins. I think they're all wearing Louboutins.
I know. You sent me the OC meme and I kind of got it.
You haven't watched it like, I feel like the little, like a old millennial's like a few years older than you.
I didn't really understand it.
Yeah, it really hit me because that was like a cultural phenomenon when it aired. And I didn't even see it when it aired. Like, people were just talking about it forever. And then I saw that episode so many times because I got it on DVD and rewatched it 1,000 times.
Well, I couldn't get over the fact that she died during The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. And Travis walks out at her two exes' hometown and picks her up.
And he does like a little Irish
and revives
jig kick.
Her.
So cute. And so symbolically relevant. There was this really funny meme where I had pictures of them out on a date that night. And it was like, Taylor went on a date with one of her backup dancers. I was like, la, la, la. And there were so many really cute edits of like him with the bracelet and then cut to him on stage with her, or like her watching him and him watching her, and then her on the field when he won the Super Bowl and him on the stage with her. Just adorable.
It's so cute.
And then Travis was interviewed on another sports podcast. I don't know if you caught the 10-minute clip, but he talks about Taylor and then he ranks his top favorite 3 Taylor songs. Blank Space is his favorite. So High School is his 3rd favorite. I think he said Karma is his 2nd favorite. And he was like, do you know who Karma is? And the guys on the podcast were like, Jake Gyllenhaal. Isn't it the guy on the screen? He's like, it used to be the guy on the screen.
Now it's the guy on the Chiefs.
I was like, this is embarrassing for you guys. To not know.
Did you watch the whole thing or just that clip?
I watched 10 minutes where they talked about Taylor Swift.
Yeah, that's about all I
need to watch the rest about football. All right. Then, next on the news docket. Okay, so next week for our 81st episode, we were going to do this for 80, but then we realized we needed to talk about it on an episode before we did it. We're going to like do an AMA episode because we figured the last time we did it, like, get to know the host episode for the general podcast listenership was the first episode. So we're going to do an AMA on the main show. But to do that, we need y'all's questions. If you don't know what AMA stands for, it's Ask Me Anything. So if you're a listener, please send in any sort of questions. You can ask us anything. You can leave them as comments on the Instagram post about this episode that'll go up on Friday, and or you can email them to us, but probably easier to just throw them in the Instagram. But if they are questions that you want to be anonymous, you can drop them in our email, thoseforkingfangirls@gmail.com. Please get those over to us ASAP. We'll probably be recording at the beginning of next week, so the sooner the better. Thank you all in advance for your cues. We're excited. Last on our news today, my book came out May 21st. It's been over a month since Catch at the Hip came out. If you don't know, it's a Survivor rom-com. It's Survivor with like a rom-com twist. You don't have to ever have watched Survivor to enjoy it. It's like a super fun, bingeable book, and it's out now wherever you like to read or listen to your books. So if you haven't read or listened to it yet, the link is in the show notes. And if you have read or listened to it and you enjoyed it, I would really appreciate you reviewing it on any of the main store platforms on the internet or anywhere that you read it or bought it from. It's just super helpful, because the more reviews there are, the more the site promotes the book to new readers. So, yeah, thank you so much. If you've already left a review, I really, really appreciate that. It means a lot. And it's really, again, it's super helpful for the book to find new readers. All right, let's move on to what right now. Natasha, what have you been reading?
I just finished The Viscount Who Loved Me, which is Anthony's book. And I really liked it. I still, like, I'm not in love with these books as they are compared to the TV show. Everyone's like, oh yeah, Anthony's my favorite book, or like Benedict's my favorite book. But I honestly feel like I don't feel as connected to them without having the TV show. Because in my head, like, all of these extra scenes and bits that are changed and different feel like little deleted scenes right now, because I just am obsessed with the TV show. I really like Anthony's character in the book. Katie says, to be clear, I don't think the books are good. I just want you to read them so you know the lore of... Thanks, Katie. So yeah, so the one thing that I think that is missing from the TV show, from the books, is Kate, a little bit more of Kate's backstory. If you remember in the TV show, there's a whole part where she's like afraid of thunderstorms and lightning. And that actually has a whole like big significant kind of arc in the book. And we hear more about her real biological mother. And
oh, cool.
Because both of them, if we think about, like, they both have lost their fathers, and Kate has also lost a mother. Like, she has Mary, who is, you know, her adoptive mother and, you know, her stepmom. But we never really talk about the trauma of, like, losing her mom at such a young age. And the thunderstorms tie back into the trauma of, like, losing her mom. And there's a really, like, really nice scene. Now, I think I understand why, because, like, they don't get married in halfway throughout the book. You know, they get married at the very end because they didn't want to do the whole, like, you know, getting caught having to get married when he's trying to suck the venom out of her chest. But that whole part of it is not in there, because at like one point, like, she wakes up in the middle of the night because of the thunderstorm and has like a whole night terror, basically. And he kind of like realizes, like, oh, he really does truly love her.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's a lot. It kind of mirrors his trauma too.
It does.
The bee sting scene.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There's no horseback riding, which I miss.
I love the riding.
Me too.
Because Kate loves it so much.
She does. And
that's why it's so fun.
At the very end, there's a carriage disaster, I guess, accident.
Oh my God, an accident like in the Swan Princess?
Yes. And we think Anthony thinks that she's dead, but she's not, and like she wakes up in the middle of him like saving her. But it's not as dramatic as when she falls off the fucking horse and like bangs her head, and that's when Anthony realizes that he loves Kate, is in that scene. So I think I prefer the TV show.
Yeah. I mean, the TV show, we have more background, I feel like, in more characters. So you're invested in so many more people, right? Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like from your explanations.
Yeah.
Well, I'm reading Paradise Problem. I've gotten further. I'm like in the middle of the book. So that's exciting. And I've started listening to Swordcatcher again because they dropped the... Swordcatcher is by Cassandra Clare. It's her adult novel. And they had dropped the cover of the second novel in that series. So I was like, it's time for you to fucking read that book, Christine. I feel so much shame about having not read it. Like, I feel really bad. And I want to read it. I just had to like let myself drop into the lore and stop worrying about like, I don't know exactly what this is. Should I rewind? You know, that feeling. Mm-hmm. But you just kind of got to go. That was our first Forking Fan Girls book club. Oh, you had thoughts. Well, we'll see what my thoughts are, I guess. Don't tell me your thoughts yet. No spoilers. I will want to hear them eventually, though. All right. Now, have you watched any movies?
No, I haven't really been watching movies or TV shows because of the ball.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Neither have I because of all the traveling. Well, I did watch TV. I finished Perfect Match. You did too. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing with Perfect Match. This happened last time too. Like, none of the couples stay together because they are in this situation where they're in this little bubble, but it's not like Love is Blind where they all live in the same city. They're all from literally all over the world, so it's close to impossible that any of these couples are gonna last because they have to get out of here and move back to their other ends of the earth and quote try to make it work. And there are these reality stars now with people like in their DMs 24/7. It's just they're set up for a failure.
Yeah.
But I did really love this season. I think they did a really good job making slight changes from season one to make it even better, make the stakes higher. They definitely like made it more survivory. The jury at the end felt more survivory. I feel like the challenges were much better. So I love watching it. Like, I know it's really sad to me that even the couple that was the strongest didn't last because they're so far apart from each other in the world. But like, I loved watching their romance.
Yeah, me too.
All right, Natasha, what have you been watching?
Only Perfect Match. That's it.
How did you feel the finale was? It was a great finale, honestly. There was a lot of drama. It was really entertaining.
It was a good finale. I mean, at the very end, it was good. I think I got a little bored in the beginning of it, but that's about it.
I didn't. Micah and Kaz, Jess and Harry, there was a lot going on. I think you just got like a little hurt because of Jess, because I did too.
Yeah. He's like a professional gaslighter.
Well, there's an episode on Armchair Expert from the past few weeks because I've been catching up about narcissism, and it's really interesting. And he checks some of those boxes. I think that's it for what right now, right? Yeah, I've been rewatching Bridgerton season 3. I just finished my rewatch today, so I'm prepared for our Bridgerton discussion.
Oh, I want to rewatch it already. Like, but I needed to like, I feel like I needed to mourn it a little bit, and then I needed to come back to it.
I really felt like I needed to watch it again because I was watching it like during, you know, between tour and Olivia's wedding. I wasn't like sitting and absorbing it like I wanted to.
Yeah.
So. All right, we're going to roll into our main discussion. But before that, I'm going to take a second to thank everybody out there listening. Natasha, do you want to thank them today since they're used to hearing my voice and they might not hear it as much anymore?
Yeah, I'm so used to you doing this.
All right, let's see. Give it a go.
Yeah, we just want to take a moment to thank everyone out there who's listening. If you're new here and you haven't yet rated or reviewed us on your favorite podcast listening app, go ahead and do that. We really appreciate it. Usually you can review on Apple Podcasts. And also word of mouth helps us out a lot. You can also follow us on all of our social medias at Those Working Fangirls on Instagram and TikTok and also on YouTube. We have a visual version if you are sick of just listening to us and you want to actually watch our faces, we do have that version up as well. And then if you want to support us in a bigger way, we have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/@thoseforkingfangirls. Is it at those forking fangirls or just those forking fangirls? There's a few different tiers there and different perks. The main one is our fangirl tea time. So at the end of every episode, we have a 30 minute to an hour sometimes extra show where we dive into deeper, more personal subjects. I think we're going to talk about the Love Cereal Ball today, kind of like the happenings and behind the scenes. Last week, we talked about Christine's sister's wedding and little snippets from that time. And then you can also watch us live here. So if you ever hear us call out people, they're actually watching us live and they're talking to us at the same time. And it's a really great time. And then there's also Team Edward. And we have a free trial for Team Jacob, which includes the Fangirl Tea Time and watching us live. You can try us out for a week and see if you like it. Team Edward has extra bonus episodes, and Team Pulse Bananas has, we do a monthly hangout session with our patrons on Zoom, and you can also write in to be on the show.
Yep, yep. And if you're not already, make sure you're following the show for free on your favorite podcast listening app. That way you never miss an episode. Or on YouTube, you can subscribe for free. You never miss a visual episode.
Yeah.
All right. We are going to be back right after these messages, unless you are a patron, because patrons get the show ad-free. See you in a hot second.
Spring is giving fresh start vibes. Like, suddenly you want to open the windows, drink more water, and maybe act like you have your life together. But when dinner rolls around and you're this close to ordering takeout again, ButcherBox can help. They deliver premium, clean protein straight to your door. No antibiotics, no added hormones, no mystery ingredients. Just real food that actually fuels your body instead of slowing it down. Effortless glow-up energy, but make it dinner. For over a decade, ButcherBox has led the industry with meat and seafood that's antibiotic-free, hormone-free, and independently verified. Because when it comes to fueling your body, quality isn't extra. It's everything. Clean, whole protein means better support for strength, metabolism, and that steady, all-day energy we're all chasing. As an exclusive offer, new listeners can get their choice between chicken breast or top sirloin for a year, or ground beef for life. Plus $20 off when you go to butcherbox.com/pods. That's right. Your choice of chicken breast or top sirloin for a year, or ground beef for life. Plus $20 off your first box and free shipping always. That's butcherbox.com/pods. Don't forget to use our link so they know that we sent you.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives. Blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just 10 bucks. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
All right. Main discussion time. The long-awaited Bridgerton second half of season 3. We ended on Penelope being asked to marry Colin and her being like, yes. And we start on her being introduced to the Bridgertons as being engaged in their house.
Oh.
How did you like this opening scene?
I think when I turned it on the first time, I was just so excited just to continue watching it. And I had such like high hopes for everything. And I just literally could not wait to get to Colin and Penelope, like just being together.
I want to talk about what Katie just said.
Yeah. I know. I was about to get to that. So,
yeah.
So like we're walking through the corridors of the Bridgerton house and the camera's like slow-mo cockeyed as
it's and like then canted and moving from side to side and so like she's gonna faint like she's having a panic attack
and then they slow-mo Colin's we're engaged
No, I think like what's happening is she's super overwhelmed because she never thought that this ride was gonna end this way. Mm-hmm. And all her dreams are coming true to the point where like she's in shock. But it did. So Katie said, can we talk about why it was framed as a horror scene, the music and the slow-mo? And it was like making you slightly feel slightly off kilter instead of letting you be like happy for them.
Well, because then like we feel like one little bit of happiness in it, you know. Violet was so happy for her. Hyacinth is happy for her and them, and it's like yay. I think Benedict's in the scene, and then it's like boom, reality.
Eloise is like, fuck this. Oh, how dare you?
I'm like, oh my god, Eloise, please. And then we have to remember that she's actually Lady Whistledown, and this isn't going to go as we think. There's going to be some type of...
Well, there's the whole thing, like, now how do I be Lady Whistledown? I'm going to have to tell Colin I'm Lady Whistledown. Mm-hmm. I think she knows, and that's part of why she's having this panic attack. Because she's like, oh, fuck, how am I going to move forward as Lady Whistledown, and Eloise is going to be in that house, and Eloise is going to react poorly to this. Like, she's anticipating all this because she's smart. She knows that, mm-hmm. like, there's a lot of other reactions that people are going to have. It's just that, like, it dulled our ability to be excited to see her actual panic going into the Bridgerton house and telling everyone they're engaged before she settles things with Eloise. Like, she hasn't fixed, mm-hmm. like, the rift in their friendship yet.
Mm-hmm. Just... so much of the season, I was just so excited for Penn and Colin. And I feel like generally most people's thoughts are there's just not enough of Colin and Penelope in it. Like, not enough intimate scenes, not enough of them together. However, I feel like I'm still satisfied because there was so much healing going on with a lot of other characters in Penn.
I'm not satisfied with the season as a whole. I feel like a lot of things weren't fully fleshed out the way that we really needed them to be.
I think I'm just lying to myself because I don't want to be more angry than I already am.
But what they did really well was Penelope and her character development and her relationship with her mom and her sisters. That whole arc was really beautiful and really got me both times I watched it. I was just so... proud of them all for how far they'd come together and how they had started to support each other in different ways where they were all clashing in the previous seasons. And while I think, Emily says part one was so strong, I think part one was much stronger than part two of the series, season three.
I don't know. Because it's like, I really liked part one, but I think there still wasn't enough setup for Colin and Penn. Like, and now I want to take into consideration that we've had two seasons of setup, but it still wasn't enough.
Like, I feel like I really enjoyed rewatching part one, but part two, I feel like I didn't get as much out of the rewatch as I did when I rewatched part one, because you have all the stuff with Lord Debling and a lot of interesting Cressida, Eloise conversations and scenes. And I'm really interested in what they're doing with the Mondridge family. Like, I feel like their son must play a big part in another Bridgerton's future life. Like, are they going to marry that son, like Hyacinth or something?
Oh,
because why is it such a big deal that, like, because nothing's really happening with them except that they're like adjusting to society, but we've spent a lot of time with them and their son. So I want to know why, because I feel like they're going to tie into a bigger storyline in the future.
I wonder. Yeah.
Katie says, as someone who read the books, I'm scared for what's next. Imagine this. They made an Infernal Devices show, but they leave out Will Herondale. Like, that's what they've done by setting up future seasons the way they did. What the fuck? What do you mean?
Are you talking about
Will Herondale?
Michaela, or who was supposed to be Michael?
What are you talking about?
Okay, so at the very... So this season not only... it felt like a big setup for Hyacinth. Not Hyacinth, sorry.
Francesca.
Francesca. because we get more of her and John Sterling, I think.
Yeah.
And because in her book, we kind of, and Julia Quinn touched on this on her Instagram. I don't really want to go into it, but in her book, she has another love interest. And that love interest.
Well, it feels like it's the woman at the end.
Yeah. That love interest comes in as Michaela on the show.
Yeah.
In the book, she's Michael. And that's John's cousin.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, I did really love the way that they set up this meeting of Francesca and the new girl, because we had Mrs. Bridgerton talking about how when she met her husband, like, she could barely get words out. Like, she could barely say her own name because she was so struck. Like, the love hit her immediately. And then when she's talking to Lord, I don't know his last name, but Lady Danbury's brother, the same thing happens when he's like, could you save me a dance? And she's like, a dance would be most adequate. Yes, I'll do a dance. And I was like, oh my God, she's doing it. And then at the end, we see Francesca do the same thing after saying all of this, like, love doesn't have to be like that. It doesn't have to, like, hit you like a truck. Like, love can burn slowly. And her mom comes around and is like, yeah, you've showed me that there's another way. And then when she meets Michaela, she's like, my name's Francesca Bridgerton. I mean, Michaela, I mean, Francesca Kilmartin. That's what my name is. That's it. Hi. I was like, oh, look at that. Look at how cute that little foreshadowing ended up panning out.
Wait, Katie, who are you talking about? Who's Will Herondale?
She's saying that I think Michael was Will Herondale.
Or are we talking about Benedict?
No, it sounds like she's saying that would be a love triangle like Will Herondale, because that she's the Tessa of this situation.
Well, we're still going to get it, though. It's just going to be a queer story, right?
Yeah,
but
I guess the rules
have to change, though.
Yeah, stuff will change. Yeah. I'm really interested in where they're going to take Francesca's story in general, because if she's away from everyone else, they're going to be like a complete subplot, like her and Eloise. And I don't know if we're going to do a time jump where they come back to London, mm-hmm, or if we're going to be up in Scotland with them while we're also watching stories happen in London.
Well, that's what I'm wondering too, because also Anthony and Kate are in India.
Yeah. Well, that just set up for them to like not be there.
Apparently Jess Brownell was like, we're not writing them off the show. Like, okay. What does that mean?
Well, hopefully they'll be back in certain episodes is what that means.
Well, also, yes. So Emily says everyone left. I'm confused, though, because the epilogue scene is like a year later, basically.
9 months. Oh, I guess it is a year because the babies are a little bigger. Okay, can I ask a sidebar? Why is London called Mayfair? Is that just like London?
It's like there's Grosvenor Square, and I think Mayfair. And I was thinking this too as I was reading the book, so I'm gonna look it up right now. So Mayfair is a neighborhood
of London,
bordering Leafy Hyde Park. Mayfair is an upscale district of elegant Georgian townhouses, exclusive hotels, and gourmet restaurants. Well, that is it now.
Sounds like Kensington.
Yes. So it's just a neighborhood, and that's where all of the people who are lords and ladies live.
All right. So yeah. Is it going to be like an ensemble where we go to different places, or is there going to be a time jump and we're going to be back in Mayfair? We will see. But
assuming, because like, I mean, if they continue doing this thing where like someone comes out and someone becomes, you know, a debutante, and then they're going through, like, it's just going to get the like very repetitive, right? It's just balls, balls, balls. Someone falls in love. Like, I feel like they definitely need to jump to different locations. Areas. Like, it would be really cool to see Scotland.
Maybe the family goes to Scotland to visit them or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And I really liked when we went to the family home last season. And,
yeah, me too. So maybe everyone can go to Scotland and make the trip.
Yeah. And I would really love to see Kate and Anthony in India, but
I doubt they're going to take us there. That really felt like they're too expensive.
Katie says, I saw the showrunner, in this case, Jess Branwell right now, saying that they did all the books that take place in London first, and now they're tackling the ones that take place elsewhere for the next few.
Interesting.
Huh. Well, yeah. I have hope that we're still going to fucking see Johnny and Simone Ashley in the next season. I just really hope and pray. Because that's what I was trying to get at is that the epilogue scene is a whole year later. So their child has already been born for 6 months because Kate was already very much pregnant when she traveled to India. And then now we have like a 3-month-old that like Penelope has who probably just got pregnant. I think they confirmed it. Like she was pregnant like right after, like the whole time. Yeah. I want to know like what happened with Eloise. You know, it's a whole year later. Are they back yet? Like, do we have to now go time jump back?
Well, it feels like almost if Eloise is time jumped, it'll be like Colin and how he was time jumped with his travels. You know, we didn't see any of them. Mm-hmm. We only heard him talk about it after.
It feels a lot like when those scripted like Friends did, you know, they would have like a summer and then you would just kind of hear about their summer because they couldn't really go anywhere because
we went places in Friends, we had a budget.
Yeah, but like they were stuck to just sets typically because they needed an audience.
Well, home base and a live audience, yeah. But I mean, the thing is that the story wasn't there. The story was after. That's why. If the important parts of her story happened in another place, we'd go to that other place. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to see. I don't know. And someone in the chat, I don't remember now because we had to refresh, but said next season's Benedict, right? And I feel like they set it up so that it could be Benedict or it could be Eloise.
Or it could be Hyacinth.
Or Hyacinth or Francesca again? Question mark.
I'm sorry, Francesca. I keep getting Hyacinth and Francesca mixed up. It could not.
I was like,
not
if we
Hyacinth,
do a big time jump, Hyacinth.
No, yeah, I think you're setting up for Francesca right now because she's already married. Unless we're gonna get a whole season with the Kill Martins and then we do that jump. I don't know.
Okay, Katie says, lol, Eloise. I want to see the world. Bridgerton picks the sibling going 50 miles north versus the sibling going to another continent. I feel like she likes Francesca better than she likes John Uthin. His name's Anthony. I feel like they have a tighter relationship, like as sisters. Mm-hmm. And she feels like she's fulfilling this role of going with her sister and watching over her for her mother, rather than just like tagging along with Anthony and Kate, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
It's less scary. This is like, it's her first time leaving the nest. And I think like when I was going to college and I had to choose between like applying to more schools in California or just applying on the East Coast, like I was ready to leave, but not go that far. I wasn't ready to go to California yet. And I feel like that's what Eloise is also kind of having in the back of her head. Like, she's ready to go. But, like, go to India? That's really far.
That's very far. And it's a lot of traveling time.
It's a lot of culture shock and for her who hasn't left the town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think Scotland is a nice medium.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice starting point. And then she can go other places.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I would love to see them all in Scotland because I fucking love Scotland.
Mm-hmm. So next season, are we thinking Eloise or Bridgerton? Because are we thinking Eloise or Benedict? Because I feel like we've set up for either of them or both of them at the same time.
Or Francesca.
I feel like Francesca would go along with another character. Like, she's not going to be the main. She just doesn't have that lead main character energy.
I know. I feel like she's not going to get her own season, but we haven't read her book, so I don't know what's all in her book.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's going to be Benedict. Like, he was number 3 on the docket, and now, like, it's his time. Like, what is he? He just, this season, he just didn't really have it kind of felt like, you know how last week you were talking about how we needed like earned smutty scenes?
Yes. And this, it didn't feel earned.
And his scenes did not feel earned.
No.
They kind of just were there.
They felt weirdly edited too. Rewatching it, it was really weird because we were like on to the next day with yes. the other Bridgertons.
Yeah.
And we went back to their threesome just for, it felt like, for shock value of having a threesome rather than for the emotional arc of him like accepting that he's bisexual and moving forward with an open mind in terms of like who he can be with. Like, it didn't feel, mm-hmm. you don't feel the weight of that. They didn't do him justice on that end.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. I felt that too. And I noticed that editing where we were just the timeline on, and a lot of this was weird. Yeah. Where we moved in the next day, but then we flashed back and like, it kind of, it's kind of feeling a little bit like Crescent City, where like the chapters are so short in between, like we're not with these characters for very long and then it flash forwards to someone else.
Yeah.
We need more of a Game of Thrones approach where we're
you
with
concentrate
characters.
On like two characters for an episode. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like mm-hmm. they're just not doing that. Katie was like, I was like, wow, this is the longest threesome ever.
Yeah. It was so strange. We do flip from character to character too much and we don't get enough depth from any one character. Mm-hmm. Especially in the second half. I feel like we concentrated a lot on Penelope on the first half and we should have been concentrating on Colin, but Colin didn't really have as much depth to his arc. Like we got it. Like he was trying not to be himself and he had to accept like that a woman could be powerful and could be, you know, self-sufficient and he still needed to love her. Like we got the surface level of what they were going for, but it didn't feel as deep as Kate and Anthony.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. I feel that too. And I think I've talked about this in the other episodes where we didn't have any flashbacks this season and nothing yeah. to really, I guess, nurture
solidify
their relationship.
The yeah.
What?
I was just saying solidify the beginning of their friendship. Yeah.
And to like nurture their future relationship. They talked about meeting so many times. Like yeah. Eloise talked about, oh, you met Colin first. And then even in, I think, the second episode, Colin and Penelope talk about how they met the first time. Why are we hearing about it? Why aren't we seeing it?
Yeah. I don't know why. I mean, it would have been even more impactful after hearing about it in like little glimpses to finally see it at the last episode. Like, mm-hmm. and have it maybe open the episode or something.
Yeah, because there's in the church, she confesses that she's been in love with him her entire life. That would have been a perfect mm-hmm. place to put a flashback.
Yeah. I'm just reading what Liza just said. Okay, well, she said, agreed, I wanted to like the bi threesome for representation, but I couldn't. Probs also because of her consent violation. Super sketch that she didn't tell him about her being poly until she called him. Until he caught her.
Oh, basically. Yeah.
But that was weird. Like, why would she not say that she's with him sexually when he asked, like, specifically? And she was like, we're friends. Good friends. It's weird. Nicole says, yes, I also thought it would have been sweet to see Penn interact with Colin's dad. Yeah, that would have been really sweet. She's the only love interest who got to meet the Bridgerton dad before he died.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. You're so right. That's really, they really missed a lot of opportunities to set the foundation of their friendship because we never really saw their friendship. We saw through Penn's eyes that she had a crush on Colin. Mm-hmm. And I know that like they were friends through Colin's eyes this whole time, but for us, it wasn't very friendly. It was us seeing Colin kind of being dismissive mm-hmm. of Penn a lot. And in the first season, we get that one little glimpse that's really cute when
he saves her from Cressida.
Yeah, asks her if she wants to dance. But mm-hmm. that's the only little moment we have where we feel like both of them are kind of on board on the same level of like we like each other, we're BFFs.
There is that one moment in season two where he comes back from his travels and they look at each other. And it's like the first time they're seeing each other after, you know, she's been writing to him all summer. And it's like a really cute moment. But that's one of the only moments as well.
Yeah, and I don't feel like he's on the same, like, seeing her the way she sees him yet.
Yeah. I was rewatching part one last night. I think I bought into it a little bit more, like Colin's point of view. It's just so much staring.
Like, yeah. There's not his stares. I don't like his stares. I don't like the way he looks when he's staring. He's like, he has his mouth open. I'm like, close your mouth.
I think whoever was editing it just didn't make it apparent enough that he was looking at her, like, across the ballroom. Yeah. There should have been a bigger punch in. Yeah.
Honestly, in general, whoever edited this season was not doing the best job. I feel like the editing was a little wonky. And editing is such a big part of the storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. But I think there should have been a lot. They should have... I'm still happy with it. Like, again, I know Christine said...
No, I still enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah. But I just feel like there could have been so much more. And I know people say that about Anthony and Kate because we only really got, like, the little, like, flashes of sex scene at the very... Compared to the first season when there's, like, so many sex scenes. Like, everyone's like, oh, my God, we want all the sex scenes.
I think we got so much character development we and got tension so... with them. Like, it was beautiful.
Yeah, I agree.
I really want to talk about the balls. So... We had these very elaborate balls this season, and they all had like a little gimmick for the queen's attention. And I just want to talk about that contraption at the Mondrich ball. It's like a big, weird pyramid that just opened up to have like weird
paper flowers.
Pointy paper flower. What was that? Like, what? Who made it? What? Who took the time to make a giant? Like, weird dinosaur egg full of flowers.
Okay, I'm watching this 1 week until the Love Syria ball, and I'm like, how can I do something like something like this?
Like, it was so random, because I was expecting something much cooler, like people dancing inside there or something, but it was just like paper flowers that stuck out. You know, what was much better, and I don't know how they did this either, the bugs at the Penelope sisters ball.
Marley, the bugs!
The bugs! Like, it was a really nice moment, but also, like, where the fuck did they get all those butterflies? Who caught all those butterflies that Farley paid for with Penelope's money?
Butterfly catchers were a thing back then, so I don't know.
They had all the same kind of butterflies.
There's lots of monarch butterflies everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just suspend your disbelief.
Also something that was really standing out to me the second time I watched it was that the columns, like the top of the columns were CGI and the top of the ballroom was CGI. Mm-hmm. And I was like, where the fuck are they? Is this the Featherington house? Like, where are they? Is that?
I want to know that too, because they both didn't marry men with titles. They had a much smaller house.
Penelope and the mom were already there. It was like they were coming into their house. I was so confused. I'm like, where are they? Emily said, I assumed they got caterpillars. They had them all in there just waiting for them to turn into butterflies this whole time. Caitlin says, I think it was a venue. I don't know. It was just weird the way that they were welcomed in by Penelope and her mom. And she was like, girls, stop exclaiming like you're peasants and you've never seen something fancy before. It was I mean, I loved their ball, but don't get me wrong. But the whole time it was like, where are we? What is the CGI tops of these columns?
The Mondridge's ball, that was a really great scene with Cressida, especially after
The music was perfect when she came in. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Yes, with the red dress. It was very much the Scarlet Letter walking in.
Mm-hmm. And I like how they delivered all the little notes, because like I really felt for her in that point, because I understood where what she was doing and how she wanted to get away from her family and not be married to someone like that. So I understood it.
Yeah.
But when she was trying to write the Lady Whistledown, I'm like, oh, girl, oof, you would have loved AI.
Oh, my God. I felt a lot for Cressida this season. And I don't, one of the things I don't like, we didn't really talk about what we did like, but we will get to it. We have a section of what we did like. What I didn't like was the way her arc kind of like pittered out at the end. We went through a lot of character development with her and Eloise, and the fact that they backtracked it and made her betray her and be an asshole really upset me. I felt like this used to piss me off all the time on Glee, because Glee did so much beautiful character development with their characters in the first season and a half. Yeah. And then all of a sudden they just reverted everybody because they needed conflict and they didn't find new conflict. They just redid the same thing that they've already done. Mm-hmm. And that's so not only depressing because it's like people can't change, but also it counteracts the storytelling because we put time and energy into watching this person evolve this season currently. And then to watch her go back so hard so quickly was really depressing. And I was, and we didn't get like a resolution. Like, what happened to her at the end? Yeah. Nicole says, I really thought she was going to get with Lord Doubling. Like, why wasn't that something that picked back up? I don't understand. Where did Lord Doubling go? Didn't he still need a wife?
I know. Yeah. I wondered that too. Maybe he was just,
he wasn't in any of this. This is weird.
Yeah. He wasn't in any of the second half.
Yeah. What the fuck? Now that I'm thinking about it, why wasn't he in the second half? This is so strange.
Maybe he was like so taken aback by the rejection, scandalized by Penelope and Colin, that he's like, I'm done with London society.
I mean, you'd think that there would still be like a mention of how he like left, you know, because he was upset. I don't know. That's really weird. And I still wish they kind of had a period on the end of like her arc, because she was a lead character this season. Like, she had a big part in the season and we didn't wrap her up at all, because it was horrifying to imagine like having sex with that old disgusting man.
Yeah. And apparently I think there's a scene where the mom runs into, like, jumps into the carriage at the very end to leave the husband.
What carriage? Was she shipped off?
Yeah, she was shipped off with the aunt.
She was?
I think so, right? Yeah.
I thought that she didn't go with her aunt Joanne or whatever the fuck her name was.
No, she did. That was her end. She went to Wales or Cornwall, wherever, far away.
I think it was Wales.
Oh, Cressida. Honestly, I think my favorite episode was episode 5. When everything was like ticking down, I was like, oh my God.
The ticking clock, yeah, TikTok.
Because we got the sex scene, and then we got that very dramatic scene at the very end. And that was just so good. Yeah, she swooned. And we also had the really funny bit with Anthony.
Oh, and he's like, Lilies! Okay, can we talk about their version of charades? Charades? Are they just reading like puzzles? Riddles off of a book? Like, what books are these that they're reading from? They have a charades book with riddles?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But that was fun. Like,
I love the back and forth, how Penelope and Eloise are the smartest in the room and they just keep going. I'm like, are any of us going to be able to play this game?
Yeah, I really like that part. Just the, like, the tick, tick, tick. I was feeling so much anxiety for her, too. I'm like, what's going to happen? Yes. I don't know. Like, Eloise putting this timeline on her. I'm like, come on, girl.
So when I realized what's her name was going to do earlier than she realized that she was going to do it, and Cressida, and the second she realized, I was like, say it, say it, say it, say it. Because I needed Penelope to be rescued for a second. Like, she couldn't. It was not time. Yeah,
it was not the time.
It was not time. It was not time.
Okay, let's talk about the sex scene. The one and only, like, long-awaited
elaborate
sex scene. Now, we did get the carriage scene, which was great and lovely. But then we got, like, the full sex scene. And I didn't realize that was going to happen before they were married. Like, I was like, whoa, okay, this is happening.
It just happened really fast. I know. It was 20 minutes in. I was like, oh, shit, we're going.
Yeah. Well, I love that when he comes and basically saves her and finally, like, her mom sees.
I really love that scene where he said all that stuff so that her mom wasn't going to be an asshole anymore about it.
Yeah, exactly. And I just love that part. And then he's like, let's go. Yes. And then he shows her the house that they're going to have. It's funny because in the books, they don't have a house in London. They have it like outside in the country because I don't think they could afford London. But well, they have a house now. And as soon as I saw that chase, I was like, oh. Wait, is this what's happening? I really like the way he was narrating the whole scene. And then, like, he undid the corset and we saw her boobs. And she's got perfect breasts. She does. Nicely shaped. Love them. Okay, but the scene, I didn't expect them to throw the blanket over their bums.
Well, that's a thing when they're filming. Like, I know Dax Shepard has talked about this, but like, he doesn't like the idea of someone being able to see up his asshole from like filming.
Oh,
so maybe they were not wanting that either, because like, they're in a position where like, someone behind them, if they're watching, could like see right up their asshole.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's a very like long scene because like, she undresses and then he undresses. And we just see like Penelope holding her boobs the whole time. And she's like, a very innocent face. Okay. The one thing I missed that I really wanted in that scene, because her boobs are so pretty, I really wanted to see them touch more. Like, I liked the scene, but they felt too far away from each other. Like, they weren't really embracing. And because he was hoisting himself up.
Yeah.
And I needed them to like really be more connected and more together.
Yeah. No, I feel very similarly about that. I didn't feel like their connection in the scene. I had like PTSD from like my first time and just how uncomfortable and like lost I felt, because that's how she felt. She was like, wait, there's more? Like, what do I do? And he's like, oh, I'll do everything. And it's like, no. Stop. And like, I like that she was saying that, like, no, tell me. But at the same time, I just had, I don't know if it's my own like PTSD about the whole situation and not feeling like I know what's going on, and I hate not knowing because I want to know everything ahead of time, but I felt for her in that scene rather than being able to feel like this is sexy. I felt like nervous with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt nervous with her too. Yeah, and he's like, oh, touch me. And then she like, it, the way that she
and
touches,
he says, not there yet.
Yeah, what, like, hello,
I didn't
scare
like
her.
I know. It made her feel like she did something wrong. I didn't like that either. I didn't love the scene. I wish there was more like connection, like you're saying.
Yeah. I wish they weren't on a chase. I wish they were like on an actual bed, because it felt very rigid.
Yeah.
In the whole thing. So. Yeah.
I didn't like how he felt like, it felt like he was in such a position of power in that moment. And it was like the helpless feeling. Is the, like the female PTSD of like not knowing things and everyone else knowing more than you. I don't like it.
And I think because we had like, I know he talks about like how she's beautiful and like her lips. I wish there was more talk about like her body, and like he just didn't touch her. And like, I really wanted to see him like touch her breast,
embrace her,
embrace or something like that, or kiss more, like kiss on the neck. Like, there
like
wasn't any of that.
Like more foreplay with the two of them touching. Like there was, it went straight to like what we don't
mounting.
Want. Yeah, mounting. I mean, of course I think he fingered her first, but like it was very quick in terms of like, it's time for penetration.
Yeah. There needed to be more than like.
It wasn't like Kate and Anthony where there was like more tension-y, like kissing, feeling up before it went down to like, we're having sex.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was similar to season one with Daphne and Simon when they're in the inn, but that,
but
even,
they still felt more connected emotionally to me.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Because, well, they just had that whole, like, they just told each other that they loved each other in that right before. And then we didn't get that. Did we? No, we hadn't even,
no,
they hadn't
she
even told
hadn't
each other
said
that they
it
loved
yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
She was still uncomfortable. She still felt like she wasn't sure, I feel like, of how to be around him as, like, a lover rather than a friend.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that line was still, like, they were still getting used to crossing that line. And the other couples, they already knew that it was, like, lovey. Not lovey. What am I? Lusty. You know, it was a different mindset. They already were there. They weren't being like, are we friends? How do we be around each other? It's more than friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just...
They should have spent more time with them.
They should have spent more time with them building the fucking relationship.
Yep. Yep.
We should have had a little few more episodes about that instead of just going straight into Whistle Down.
Yeah. Yeah. And Whistle Down's a big thing, but, like,
huge.
We also, it's a big thing for that, us to feel invested in their connection together.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to drop all the scenes that they cut with the two of them.
Apparently, that's not real. I think Nicola confirmed, like, there's
it's not real.
Yeah.
Got so excited.
He says it would have been a great second or third sex scene, not the first time. Yeah. I mean, even then, like, there was no connection.
And yeah, then, well, it was, they were lacking the emotional connection.
Then we got a second sex scene that was, like, 5 seconds long in a montage at the very end.
Yeah.
So are we skipping? Whatever. So we go through the whole half, the whole 4 episodes of them being angry at each other. Okay. So we have episode 5.
That was so depressing. It went so long.
It went too long. We have episode 5 where they have the sex and then she faints at the very end. Episode 6 is romancing Mr. Bridgerton. And that's, like, the only, like, romantic-y where they're, we don't have Whistle Down it, but we still have Whistle Down because she's still very anxious about it.
The most connected I felt them the whole time was when they danced in the church together.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love that scene. That's something they did well. It's one of my favorites. I love every dancing bonding scene. I'm a big dancing bonding girl. I guess I feel like I was realizing as I was writing down my favorite scenes, it's always a dance scene. But that scene was really sweet. And that's when I felt like their connection for realsies.
Yeah. Or, like, even when they looked at each other, like, across the church, like, that was.
Yeah. Yeah. When
so
he made that
cute
face and he was, like, being goofy for a second. Mm-hmm. Did you think that the queen might burst in and be like, say something? Because I was like, are they setting up for someone to burst into the church when the, because they paid so much attention to that random priest saying, like, the bindings or whatever the fuck he called them.
Yeah,
like, we've never paid so much attention to the priest. I was like, why are we looking at him for so long?
I don't know, but no, but that was, like, the cutest scene. I think we also got the ring that episode as well.
Oh yeah. That was really sweet.
That was
too.
A really sweet scene.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that episode, he finds out, he follows her because, well, I did
love the reveal that he followed her.
Oh my God. Freaking out. I had no idea. I did not expect that.
I was expecting it. It was
2 a.m. in the morning. Oh God. Oh fuck. What?
Well, because he looks over when she goes in, I thought he was going to hear everything beforehand. I wish he did. I was like, he's watching her go talk to Eloise. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't he listen up against the door like the Bridgertons and Danbury does?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true. And the whole time he was like, there's something you've been wanting to tell me. Like, well, what is it? Well, then she reveals that, like, she's loved him the whole time. But then, you know,
he thinks it's that she doesn't have feelings for him like he has for her. But I don't think we spent enough time with that.
No,
because that would make him more vulnerable. And we felt like, I almost had trouble believing everything he said because I didn't feel him being, like, genuinely connected because he wasn't being open at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He would just, like, say things but not back them up with, like, weight.
Mm-hmm. I really liked this episode where she talks to Madame Delacroix. Where she tells her, she's like, I'm going to put the pen down. Like, I'm not going to write anymore. And then Madame Delacroix is like, You know, my favorite thing I connected with this about making gowns is the look on the lady's face when she puts it on. I was like, yes, I know that feeling.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the same thing for her, too. Like when people read the writing and really connect with it.
Yeah, I think the whole relationship with Madame Delacroix was also really nice,
it's
too.
Really nice. Season. Yeah, that's one of the highlights of the season. Mm-hmm. I feel like this season was less about the romance and more about Penelope and like accepting herself and like coming into her own. Mm-hmm. And like, I just, the best thing about the season, in my opinion, is the relationship with her family and how it evolved throughout the season. Her and her mom mm-hmm. supporting her, how big of a difference that made. When she reaches out and holds her hand, when the queen comes in, it, mm-hmm. like, I start crying. When she did her speech, I was crying. And then this second time around, when her sister at the end with the babies, when her mom's like, they're going to marry well. And she's like, I think she's going to become a famous writer and not need to man to marry. I started crying. Like, mm-hmm. it was just so beautiful to see her sister say something like that too. And really feel like they respect Penelope. And mm-hmm. understand the weight of what she's done in this time where women aren't allowed any power.
Yeah. No, that was the best part of the whole season. And it was way more. And like, unfortunately, this book is supposed to be Colin's story. But he didn't really have the character development or needed much of an arc because he was just jealous. And that was his whole thing of why he was angry and hurt. And
it was like the male fragility.
For sure it was.
Mm-hmm. And you know what really hit again the second time watching it when Penelope was talking about how women are just not taken seriously and everything they say is brushed off as silly. And she finally felt like she had a voice when she started writing. And I feel, again, like it's crazy how that's still now, 200 years later, because that felt like my whole childhood. I was never taken seriously through college. Like as a woman in the film section of majors, everyone just just ignored everything I said as ideas. And Taylor talks about it and, you know, in her I'd Be the Man song, like everyone still experiences this. And I didn't feel like I had a voice till I started doing YouTube and like people would, I felt like people were actually hearing me. That's like why I became a YouTuber, because it gave me this sense of like, oh, I'm being seen. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's why I feel like so many of us got into these creative internet spaces, because we felt like we found people that actually would listen and heard us and validated what we were saying. When my whole life, I felt like everyone around me, like especially my family, who like just like laughed at my reading and like all the stuff I liked and everything I would try to say about anything I learned in school was like, global warming's not real. Like everything. And it's just like that is such a shared experience that we don't really talk about in regularly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was so funny to see their reactions on their faces when like Cressida was blackmailing Penelope. And she's like, well, I have the money, I can pay her.
And they're like, what?
You have made that much of a sum? And she's like, well, to be honest, a little bit more. And Colin's just like, what am I good for? I don't, what do I need?
I know. Why do you even need me? And that was really, that's a really nice arc. And I wish we delved into it more. We were so surface level about it.
All she says is like, love me. But then there is no, like it's built.
He has a monologue.
Builds.
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
He has monologue of acceptance, but we don't like it. Should have been a more elaborate, like we see it being accepted. Not
are you talking about in the last where? Well, I love that monologue, but it again, especially when that tension is building and building and building and she just yells at him like, I love you, like love me. There's nothing to come down from it. Like there should have been that should have been an intimate
sex scene.
Yeah. And or something like, because it just. Ents. And then, it's just, the whole thing was fresh, especially with the wedding. That wedding episode, I loved it. She looked stunning. I loved that dress. I loved her hair, her
all
makeup.
All her dresses were beautiful.
Oh, all of her dresses. But they were so angry at each other tonight, the night before. And they had that one angry kiss scene, which I didn't. I'm like, oh, that's.
And it wasn't
okay.
long enough. That should have played into another carriage scene. It would have been such a nice mirror.
Technically where the carriage scene is supposed to be.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That they should have had another one. It literally would have played so well. And then they could have had some sort of revelation about like why they're not talking to each other in that scene after that they had sex in the carriage that time that we're just making up. But it would have been a really good scene.
Yes.
None of it held weight. None of their arcs in the second half of the season together held enough weight for us to like feel connected to what they're going through.
Yeah. But then, you know, the next morning it's the wedding and she's walking down the aisle to Yellow.
And he's had this revelation because he talked to Kate and Anthony about marriage.
Oh, that's true. That was a cute scene.
Yes. Yes. I liked that scene. And I wish there was more than just a nod from Colin. Because then we go right back to him being angry because he's like, you're not going to put down your pen? Like,
Well, because like the queen comes in and puts everyone in danger, basically. And that's when he's like, no, you can't do this anymore. And he's like, I will not be going into the marriage bed tonight. Oh, my God.
That was so annoying.
That was so frustrating.
Yeah, it was. I was like so annoyed. I was like, can we just talk this out and be done, please, now? Like, we don't want to ruin the marriage night. And then for us to never see the marriage night because it was a montage sucked.
Like, they went weeks without connecting.
Nicole says, I love the scene where Kate and Anthony, her saying marriage is hard and him contradicting her made me laugh. It was so cute. And he's like, our marriage isn't hard. She's like, shut up. I'm making a point.
Anthony was quite the comedic relief.
Loved him in the season. And yeah, someone said, was it Katie who said that it was giving Hamilton the story of tonight when they were drinking together? Yeah, it really was.
Okay, then like, the scene where they're dancing together. So I actually did cry when they were walking down the aisle. And then the scene where they're dancing together and then no one's in the room gave me such Pride and Prejudice vibes. And I love that scene. I know you wrote something down here about the breakfast.
Yeah, can we talk about how wedding breakfast? So this was just a phenomenon that I didn't realize we were at breakfast when everyone was getting married. But then it made sense because they had to take the carriage really far away after their wedding in the first season. So I guess it was in the morning for them to have time to go all the way to that inn. And then, so this time when they were talking about a wedding breakfast, though, when they were like, it's not even nightfall, dancing? What do you mean dancing? Like, there's music being played. Is there really no dancing at the wedding reception? It was just very funny to me that it was scandalous of them to, like, start to dance when the sun was out. How different is this than dancing in a church? Like, it was just kind of jarring because we haven't really talked about that aspect of their universe all over the past two seasons. And I thought it was very funny.
Yeah. I know a lot of, like, my grandparents got married in the morning. It was very, like, the thing to do, like, up until, like,
I wonder 50s, if mine 60s. Did. They never told me that it was the morning. But I know they had a party, like a reception after.
Mm-hmm. It's like a luncheon type of thing.
Huh. I'm going to have to ask my Nana.
Were you nervous when the queen came in?
I'm like annoyed because like Lady Danbury said, like, what are you going to do? Like she wants that drama. She loves it. She lives. That's all she does. She feeds off of the drama. And I don't know why she would want Whistledown to stop because she'd be bored as fuck.
So I'm thinking about this and I've heard a lot of people talk about this, but in Queen Charlotte, they talk about how at the very end of the season, there is a new heir and it's Victoria. It's Queen Victoria who's about to be born. Yeah. And right after that happens, Charlotte passes away like in the next year. So I'm wondering if, because now Whistledown's revealed and they're not going to have their back and forth, if this is, if Charlotte is going to pass in the next season, or if they're going to keep it going, even though it's not technically like historically accurate. I know. It's a possibility, though, because that's how it all goes. And I'm wondering if that's because, if why they did that, to create, to keep all of the shows in London for the time being. And now there's not like as much weight to Whistledown because people know who she is now. If they're, if this is like the Queen's segue into not being there anymore.
I don't know. I'll be interested to see here how like the first episode starts of season four. Will we get, what will Whistledown be like now?
Like, I know. Well, because at the very end of the season, like, I was very confused watching the very end because Penelope reveals,
she's like, goodbye.
She says goodbye. Julie Andrews says goodbye. And I'm like, this feels like the end.
But she was saying goodbye as Lady Whistledown and hello as Penelope Bridgerton.
Well, yeah, but that took me a while.
But what does that mean? Like, I don't know if she can write a gossip column as Penelope Bridgerton. So she wants to give a voice to the voiceless. Will she just be talking about what's going on in the town, like a news column? Like,
do you think so?
I guess. I feel like she should just still use the name Lady Whistledown, and then she could be like, AKA Penelope Bridgerton. Because that way it at least gives a pen name to the column and kind of separates her a little. But doesn't seem like we're going that direction.
I don't know.
I don't know either. Well, we'll see, I guess. They must have a plan. They have a plan. I almost want Eloise to start writing Lady Whistledown. I want her to start a Lady Whistledown, like, empire where she has, like, three writers.
Yeah, and, like, Colin could do it, too.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Wait, at the very end, Colin wrote his novel.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, we, again, there was not enough setup. We just got a little glimpse of his notebook. That
I loved that scene. I thought that there was so much potential for them to bond over writing. I wish we got more scenes with her reading his writing and them talking about writing.
Yeah,
that was so hot, him being a good writer to me. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then we never touched on it again, except for the fact that he's like, my writing, you're already an accomplished writer and I'm just little scribblings. Like, fuck off. Okay, stop feeling sorry for yourself and actually talk to your wife.
Yeah, it was a very, it was very interesting, the fact that they got married and then like, usually it's like the conflict is like before the marriage happens, but like they still are they have most of their conflict in their marriage and in their relationship is after they're married. And
yeah,
I feel like we just didn't see enough and mm-hmm. not a lot of it was resolved.
And I wish we saw more of his novel coming to be, so we'd have like an arc for him and him, like, you know, talking to Penn about it and taking her opinion seriously and working together. Like, that's big for men in this era. Like, yeah, he said that he's going to respect and like he can't believe a woman this brave loves him, but like, I want to see it.
I also like wanted to hear more of their back and forth about, because like when they meet up in that alleyway and like in the street right, like the night before the wedding, like there's a screaming match about like, why did he write this about Marina? Why did she write this about Eloise? And then he's like, why did you write this about me? And like, she explains it so quickly, but I feel like there needs to be way more explanation. There's about
way
that.
More explanation. Yeah.
And then that's when they just like kiss. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. And he's like, stay still. Blah. Colin gives mansplain to me. He gives like annoying, like, I want to do everything for you. And I know that was the point for him to arc, but we didn't get to see enough of the arc. So it doesn't feel like he actually arced. I wish the epilogue was maybe longer so we could see more of them talking. Maybe.
I feel like we need a whole like Christmas
season
special.
Special?
Yeah. We need
let's see those
Frost
in between.
And Starlight.
Frost and Starlight gave us nothing.
Well, it was still
so
cute.
More than that, I barely felt the cuteness. I was like, where is the depth here? Where, what happened? Nothing. All right. Well, tell me about your favorite scenes. Which ones were your favorite?
I mean, I think my favorite scene was when she was walking down the aisle to him And then her and him dancing without anyone in the room. Mm-hmm. And then his confession. Well, I mean, I really liked how it all came together at the very end, especially with her mom. And
yes,
how
that was beautiful.
Then she got out in front of everyone and spoke. And then very end, like Colin, like, I do love the little speech that he gives her.
I love what he says. Yes.
Yes.
I just wish we got more weight behind it.
Yeah. And then she goes like, you're a good man, Mr. Bridgerton. And yeah. That made me cry.
You know what was really, I mean, I really felt when she was like, this always happens when you like start a speech and you're just trying to find your footing and your people haven't really accepted what you're saying yet. When she's like, hi, everyone. Or should I say, dearest gentle reader? Crickets. She's like, yeah, I know it's not funny. I was like, I feel you with that.
So oh real. My God, we haven't even talked about Violet and Lady Danbury.
Oh my
and
God,
that whole,
yeah. I yeah. love that. I love that so much.
I do too. When, I just feel like, I feel like this is a story that also has weight to it because
yes.
we there's tension between Lady Danbury and her brother. We don't know what mm-hmm. it is. Unless you've watched Queen Charlotte, you really don't know like the depth of
Violet and... of Lady Danbury.
Yeah. And then also like her terrible husband and, yeah. you know. And so when we hear that she was about to escape and then he's a young boy and he doesn't know and got to see both sides of that. And then finally like a sibling coming together and writing their relationship. Like that was very satisfying. And, like Violet taking him as a caller and... I don't understand the whole like watching people eat thing. It's a trend with the Bridgertons.
They look at their lips while they're eating.
Yes. Because Daphne did it with Simon. That was hot because he licked a spoon. But then I didn't understand the Colin one with her eating a cake and then him eating a cake. That was
I think they're just looking at each other's lips like they're it's drawing attention to their mouth.
Yeah. It's very funny because there on YouTube, there's a scene that, well, the actors are rewatching these scenes. So like Nicola and Luke are watching their scenes. That's very fun to watch. But also Violet, Ruth, and the guy who plays Lady Danbury's brother are watching that scene. And they're like, no, no.
Oh, my God.
I would recommend you guys watch it. It's really cute.
A thread that I really loved going through this season was though Lady Danbury being like, and Violet acknowledging that you couldn't lose my friendship if you tried. And Lady mm-hmm. Danbury being like, if he messes this up, like I'm still, you're still my friend. Like I'm picking you. Like,
yeah.
And that was so sweet. And then we get, you know, a younger rendition of that with Eloise being sad at the marriage and being like, I've lost mm-hmm. another friend to marriage, and Benedict being like, there's room to love more than, you know, the one person in your life. Like there's room for your friendship. It's beautiful and all that. That was really, really sweet.
Well, now they're sisters.
I know. Well, Eloise was kind of still processing it. Like she doesn't say anything after that. She was like, mm-hmm. She just feels like she's stuck because she's not interested in marriage and everyone's like going off and she's like, what do I do? So I'm glad she's going on her own adventure.
Yeah. Oh my God. And then the scene when both of the dueling Lady Whistledowns come out with their pamphlets mm-hmm. and we get this scathing remark about the Bridgertons, which by the way, I think is in the book in the first one. They kind of taught like Lady Whistledown has that same thread about the Bridgertons for some reason, mm-hmm. but they changed Penn's character a bit from the book because you don't really see her much. She has like one scene in book two and no scenes in like book one. Mm. Violet's reading it and Hyacinth and George are like, hi, can we read? No, you can't read this.
Don't look at it. I loved when Mrs. Bridgerton saw the second one. She's like, oh, thank God. Yeah, the Bridgertons are so pure. How dare they question them? How dare they? I feel like we have covered most of the things. Is there more, any other things you want to specifically point out and talk about?
I feel like what's going to happen is that they're going to do Benedict, Francesca, and then possibly Eloise.
Yeah, she'll have like her whole adventure this time, and then she'll be ready to find her person the next time.
I think so. A lot of people say that her book is not their favorite, so I really hope that they embellish it and
probably change it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they do with everything, so I'm sure they will.
Well, also, like, Eloise is so much better in the show than she is in the book.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love her on the show, so.
Me too.
We didn't talk about their friendship arc, but I loved when she started supporting her again and realizing what she was doing through, like, what Cressida had done to her and said to her.
She's like, what's your thing? Like,
and she says the same thing that Penelope said. And I think that really...
And what'd she say?
She says that, like, all you do is talk and you don't do anything about it.
Oh, God. Yeah. She says the same thing Cressida does.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I was like, oh, ow.
I was like, oh, fuck. Like, she's really going to self-evaluate, like, what her actual feelings are. And she does realize that she was jealous and she was not looking at it through the lens of why Penelope actually would have ended up doing that. And slowly and surely we hear her saying, like, I could actually see how someone being so ignored for so long would start writing this column. Like, she started to realize that she wasn't taking Penelope's perspective into consideration with her anger. And it was really sweet when they both finally started supporting each other again.
I know. And then we had a nice call back to season one when they're on the Featherington couch.
Yes.
And they're all like,
yeah,
laying back.
Yes.
I also really liked it in the Mondridge ball when Eloise pulls her and Penelope's like, what did I say in the first issue of Whistledown? And then Eloise's like, I don't know. Blah, blah, blah. And she's like,
no, Eloise knows. She says a quote.
She does say a quote. Yeah. But then Penelope calls back to like three misses hoisted upon the marriage market like sorrowful sows by their tasteless and tactless mamas. And I'm like, yes! I only know that because of the Bridgerton musical, because they say all those words.
They say those words. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love the scene where Colin is mad that she won't stop writing and Eloise is right there to give her a hug and be like, it's going to be okay. Like, he's going to come around. And it's really nice. And that's like the biggest ship of the season. We want Penelope and Eloise to resolve their friendship issues.
Reconcile. Yeah. It was just... the conflicts were just...
The main conflict... I mean, the main relationship wasn't what we were rooting for the most because they weren't as connected as we wanted them to be, which is sad.
And I think they were really just... Because they built up Eloise and Penelope way more than they did Colin and Penelope. And I feel like they felt like they did enough in the first few seasons, which is just not true.
No, it wasn't, yeah. I mean, they needed their own moment to be the center of attention.
Mm-hmm. I did like it though when he was like, no one blackmails my wife.
I hate that trope. I know that's your favorite.
Who did this to you?
Yes.
Fucking love it.
He goes and makes it worse. I knew he was going to make it fucking worse because he's so stupid. This is what annoys. Colin's kind of dumb. Okay. I know he's like supposedly a great writer and he's so smart, but like he doesn't give that. Mm-hmm. He gives dumb. And it like frustrates me. It gives like dumb retriever with like an ego. And it annoys me when I don't think like he reflects the character that supposedly he is on paper.
Yes, I agree with all of that. What do you think that they could have done better? Like, we've just been complaining about it, but like, what do you think that they could have done better?
Well, I think we've been giving solutions about Colin and Penelope the whole time, like that's flashbacks true. And like more connection and more foreplay when they're having their romantic scenes. And I think we needed more. Okay, this is another thing I think they could have done more of. We had the whole like training her how to talk to dudes thing, and I feel like that went really quickly and we didn't spend much time on it, where we could have done more with them together, having like scenes where they were feeling like they're romantically attracted to each other. Mm-hmm. And we had that one scene where she said like his eyes were really blue and he was like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And it got really awkward. We could have had moments like that that lasted longer where they were still talking about things that she could do and they were feeling like giggles with each other. You know what I mean? And we didn't. That premise is so fun when done the right way. And I feel like there was much more we could explore. We did, but we didn't spend enough time on them because we were like jumping to other characters.
They could have, like, the whole hot air balloon episode could have been so much better because it just ended up being an ego stroke for Colin instead of
connecting
like, him
with Penn.
Actually saving
Penn.
Yeah. Penn.
I don't, you know, I think the season could have been much, the connection could have been much better. And I'm sorry to say this right now, but like, I feel like if Colin was played by someone else. I just don't think he delivered this the way that we needed it to be.
And I see that too, especially if we're talking, if we watch them as just themselves.
Yes.
On the press tour. It is all about Nicola Coughlin. Yeah. The thing is, it's like they're so connected together, like in real life. However, I do still see that it's all about Nicola Coughlin. Like, when you watch
interviews
with the two of them, he literally, his one word is yeah. He doesn't have that much of a personality. Sorry, Luke.
Yeah.
Compare.
I feel like if we
Nicola.
Had like an Ian, a young Ian Somerhalder in this position, it would have been sexy as fuck. He just didn't have the riz.
Katie says, I'm kind of here for Penn having her golden retriever trophy husband who writes his little books and is obsessed with her, though. I don't know why. Oh, I love
it,
too.
I love that idea. I just didn't feel that he was obsessed with her. I just couldn't get the vibe.
I didn't feel like he was obsessed with her either, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think he's that great of an actor.
I still like to look. He's very pretty to me. I really like watching him. He's not my type, that's for sure.
He's not my type either. I feel like if we got the Colin that we saw in other seasons that wasn't trying so hard to be pretty, I would have believed this more. It was like all of his concentration was going into being this Edward Cullen character where he's like perfect. That's what it felt like. He's trying really hard to like maintain this perfect look for the camera instead of being like the cutesy kind of like sensitive boy that his mom talked about in the first half. Like, because he is this, like, cutesy, innocent, naive boy in the first two seasons. And if he was channeling that energy, I would have believed it more because it's sweet. Like, but he was giving not sweet with his aura in this season. He was giving, like, try hard. try hard to be
cool. I feel like we could have done the whole try hard thing for a few episodes.
Yeah.
And then he could have been like, this isn't really working for me.
Yeah.
Have a scene where, like, especially after he dreams about Penelope.
Where he consciously drops the facade.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we see him like shove off the ladies. Like, he doesn't want that anymore. He's seeking out Penelope, having more conversations with her. That should have been what happened.
Yeah. And that is what kind of happened, but we didn't get enough weight behind it. And he didn't shed the facade enough. Like, he didn't become the way he talked before. You know what I mean? Like, how he talks kind of like slow in this season. When before he would be like, I feel like I need to go traveling and I love you and you're so pretty. Like, he would talk like different. He had a different cadence to his voice. Yeah, Julia says, yes, I want nerdy, cute Colin. Yeah, he had to embrace his nerdiness again. His nerdiness of the Regency time. Because he was Regency nerd the way that he like moved and talked in the other seasons.
All right, well, I feel like we talked about everything.
I think we did. I think we covered everything. I mean, the one thing we didn't cover was like what would have given Benedict's storyline more weight. And I think if at the end he had more of a resolution of what he wanted, but he's just like, oh, I want to like have sex with everybody ever is what I was getting.
I just didn't care.
I didn't care either because we didn't have much. I cared when he first met the widow. I was like, this is a really interesting thing to explore in this time, because we uh-huh. don't see widows like dating people, you know. I mean, obviously
we hear about it,
but we haven't like been in the thick of it. And she already has mm-hmm. a house and like she's independent and all that, but we didn't have, again, like the emotional depth to it on Benedict's end didn't end up panning out.
Yeah. It felt slimy too, because of, I don't know who said it in the beginning of when we were talking, because it felt like she was setting it up and then it looked like she was cheating on him.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feel like good to me in that way. Because it felt very forced. Like, I wish she would have had a conversation with him about it first instead of yes. just like presenting this idea and yes. like just right there.
And it, you know, okay, I texted Natasha about this, but I wasn't getting like romantic vibes with them. I thought they were conning him to get Bridgerton money. Like,
me thought
too. They were going to scam him or and like threaten to tell mm-hmm. the town that he, mm-hmm. like, about him having a threesome with them or else like, pay the money. I was so suspicious. I wasn't feeling like happy. I was like nervous for Benedict. I was like, oh god, they've trapped you in this like situation where they're gonna blackmail you.
Mm-hmm.
But it,
yeah, I really thought that like that guy was like gonna kill him or
yes,
something.
Yes, it just didn't they give off villain vibes? Like they were giving villain. Yes.
Very villain.
Yeah. It wasn't giving like let's have like a care about each other threesome to me. It was like, oh, we're gonna trap him in this situation where he's gonna have to pay us money.
I also really like the scene where Francesca and Violet were playing the piano together. That was really cute.
I really like that too. I wish it was like more. I feel like we didn't get to see them. We saw everyone else hearing them, but I was like, I want the camera on them, please.
Yeah. Also, just anything with the Bridgertons is so cute. Yes. I think there's also a scene where George and Hyacinth are flanking Benedict on the couch and talking about like chocolates or yeah. something. And it's just, I like yeah. rewound that scene so many times. It's just so cute.
It was like with Francesca wanting to announce something with Lord Kilmartin. He's like, I don't even think everyone will hear me. And he says something and everyone's just like, I want this chocolate. It was so family party.
Caitlin says, what about Francesca's loss of words at her husband's sister relative?
Oh, yeah. We talked about that last night.
Yeah. So
that's
again,
alluding to her being like hit by the love truck.
Yeah. So Francesca is, you know, bi.
Mm-hmm.
But in the book, it's Lord Kilmartin's cousin, Michael. But they've changed Michael to Michaela. And Michael is a rake. And so I'm wondering, like, how Michaela is going to be, like, the female version of a rake.
Interesting. Well, she does seem very flirty right off the bat.
Very flirty. And also, like...
very outgoing.
Like, very much aware of herself and her wants and her needs. Mm-hmm. And like just a few bits that we got from
yeah.
her.
Yeah. Because there's also this moment with Francesca when she kisses him when they get married and she kind of has this weird like, oh, I don't feel anything. So I wonder if she's mm-hmm. actually gay and not bi.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So
I wonder if that's.
We'll yeah. see. I mean, bi is gay. Sorry, a lesbian.
Yeah.
Yeah, she likes women. So we'll see how that pans out. But we were talking about this. So in our first half of like our Bridgerton episode discussion, not this first half, the first Bridgerton discussion we did, we were talking a lot about how like one of the Bridgertons has to be gay. And then the second half of the season, we're like, okay, two of the Bridgertons might be gay.
Well, then we're like, how is this? I'm like, being gay is bad in this world. Like, it's not legal. That's what I meant by saying that.
But we were like, and she could find a way to do it without making it traumatic.
It's very easy, I think, back in that point, that day, if you had a house and you were married, just like these, like the widow Tilly is, and you have a quiet household of servants, like very easy to be gay.
Well, I don't know if it's easy to be gay because they can't be out in public. I mean, I think that's an overstatement. I just think that they could obviously hook up. Is what you're. It's easy to hook yeah. up with,
but they can't love out loud.
They can't love out loud, and they can't get married. They can't. They don't have like mm-hmm. gay rights, and they don't have acceptance yeah. by the community. So there's a whole other mm-hmm. bag of worms there. But it's just. I think they can explore that storyline in a way that can bring joy rather than trauma, like we were talking about. Hopefully, because they've found ways to do that in their little fantasy world. It's not a little fantasy world, in their fantasy version of history.
Like we said again, like hopefully Queen Charlotte can announce that love is love.
I would love that. Honestly, she
yay gay
that
rights
would be really nice to just have that. So then we just have to they just have to find love. They don't have to battle the standards of society. Deborah said there were some moments when Francesca would look at Penn and talk to her that had me thinking this was the way that they would go. Yeah. No, I felt that too. I felt that's what we all felt in the beginning, right? We were like, oh, is Francesca gay? And then we thought that it was just like she was just on the spectrum and we were having that kind of representation. And now it's come back around. We just needed to give it time. All right, let's move on to Mary Kiss Cliff. Okay, Mary Kiss Cliff. Lady Bridgerton, Lady Danbury, or Queen Charlotte?
Wow. All the mamas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Queen Charlotte. Okay. This is rough. I think we need to do more Mary Kiss Cliffs of like people that we love. Because this is hard.
Yeah, I know. Okay, I'm going to marry Lady Danbury. I'm going to kiss Lady Bridgerton. I'm talking about Mama Bridgerton. And I'm going to cliff Queen Charlotte. I'm sorry. Power has gone to your head and you've gotten a little woo-woo.
Okay, I am going to marry Mrs. Bridgerton. I'm going to kiss Lady Danbury and I'm going to cliff Queen Charlotte.
I feel like Lady Danbury and I would have a lot of fun around the ton.
Around the ton.
Matchmaking. That is our episode this week. We hope you had a good time. We'd love to hear any thoughts that we might have missed, any thoughts that you have on anything we said. You can leave a comment in our YouTube comments here. You could leave a comment on our Instagram at Those Forking Fangirls, or you can always email us at thoseforkingfangirls@gmail.com. Remember, we're doing our AMA next week, so please leave questions in our comments as well. I will scour all of the comments for questions. Just write that this is for the AMA so I can clock it, or like hashtag it AMA so I can clock it, or you can email us with questions for the AMA. All of that and is appreciated, and we'll get it on the dock for next week because that's going to be a fun episode. And we release episodes every Friday. Our podcast is edited by Alex Polis, Ricky McBrayer, Christine Riccio, Natasha Polis, and
adding herself. We have been editing almost every episode.
We have. And the music is by Cole Jenkins with vocals by Heather Traska. Our socials are done by Chloe Laverson. She kills it over there, so make sure you're following us on Instagram. My name is Christine.
I'm Natasha.
We're off to go record Fangirl Tea Time, which is a Patreon perk from the $5 tier and up. So if you want to check that out, you can go check out the link to our Patreon in our show notes. And we will see you next week. Bye, everybody. Bye.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SPINQUEST.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hi there, we are James and Dan, two forts of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favorite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a Not Not.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.